My guest this evening is Laura Magdalene Eisenhower. Laura Eisenhower is famous for at least three reasons, maybe more. She is famous, of course, because of the family name. She is the great-granddaughter of President Ike Eisenhower. She is famous because she went public with information about a secret government survival base on Mars. And she is public because she is famous because she is public as an ardent campaigner for making Earth sustainable for human life. Now, it's been quite some time since Ms. Eisenhower has been my guest here on the show. She has been my guest previously, and we're delighted to have her back with us tonight. Laura, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Laura, I guess by now, because I went on the internet and just kind of was interested in seeing how many times you have been asked to tell the story about Mars, and it has you're all over the radio shows with people interviewing you about that. I guess you've probably told that at least 1,000 times now or more. Would I be correct?
Yeah, I've definitely talked about it a lot, and more gets added to the story as whistleblowers are emerging and more information about it, you know, comes forward, which, you know, of course connects many dots.
Uh-huh.
But yes, it's been, I've told it a lot, that's for sure.
Well, for that reason, I don't wish to just dwell on Mars tonight. It's a fantastic story, and by fantastic, I mean it's just amazing. And quite interesting. And I invite everyone who's listening, if you didn't hear when she was with us before, go to our archives and catch that, because back when she first started talking about that, she was on this show and talked with us about it. But I do have a couple of questions about that that I didn't ask, I didn't think to ask at the time, and then I want to get into some more stuff that you're involved in. So if you don't mind, just a couple of questions about the Mars base. Were you ever, during this time when they were trying to recruit you to go live there, to go be there and be a part of it, were you ever told where it was located on Mars?
No, I was not. All I could really do was overhear conversations, and what I ended up hearing was more about terraforming and introducing different algaes and different ways that they were going to try and make it more inhabitable on the actual surface rather than in the underground bases, which is what I gathered it was going to, you know, first be underground. And that's about as far as I was able to hear. And but yeah, most of the discussions had to do with terraforming that I listened into, and these arcs that they called them, like crafts, that would be, you know, going from Earth to Mars with what seemed to be, you know, people and equipment.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, were you ever told how many people were already there, or how many they envisioned it being at the time that it would be complete?
No, I didn't really get exact numbers, but what I was told was that two main crafts would be leaving Earth with the target date 2012. One of the crafts would be named, or they called them ARCs. ARCs would be named Sophia, and the other one Merlin. And those were the two main ones, and that they would be there would be others, and that we could fill them with certain people that were specifically chosen, and that I would be given some sort of position of power to be able to possibly be a part of the picking. But as far as how many people were there, I didn't get a lot of numbers, but I've definitely heard from whistleblowers, you know, we're talking hundreds of thousands that have been there, and only maybe 7,000 survivors out of these large numbers that have actually made it. But then we hear stories from Arthur Neumann, who was age-reversed, who was up there for about 20 years and then was age-reversed and had worked up there. So, you know, to get the real numbers and the real story about what's actually going on there, folks like him and, of course, Andrew Bishago definitely have a lot more of that data than I do.
Well, let me tell you what prompted me to have those two questions. What prompted me to have those two questions is we had a guest on the show not too long ago who just in passing mentioned that there were about 500,000 Earth humans living on Mars now. Would that sound like about the right number to you, or would you have any idea whatsoever?
I mean, it sounds about right. I mean, I don't know what's happening, you know, of course, in present time there. But, I mean, like I said, I did hear in the past hundreds of thousands, so 500,000 would make sense. But I did also hear only 7,000 have survived, but they might have, you know, brought more numbers in. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that does make sense to me.
Well, did you hear why the others did not survive?
Well, here's the question. I don't know if they meant physically survive or was able to, you know, stay there. Mm-hmm. They might have been sent back to Earth. You know, it might have meant, you know, they weren't able to survive and so they had to be sent back, or that they actually perished. And I just don't know the exact facts on that. All I do know is that, you know, the folks that were up there that Andrew Bishago greeted or ran into were not having an easy time at all. And the conditions are just, you know, very difficult. People feel very trapped and very starts to make you kind of crazy. But, you know, he was able to walk on the surface. He had a respirator that he ended up not needing to use. And so, you know, you can breathe on the surface, except there's predators. And that's what Andrew Bishago talks a lot about. So the lives that I know were lost, not sure the numbers, if that relates to the 7,000 surviving or not and the rest of them perishing, definitely had to do with the predators being eaten by them. And, you know, just you know, maybe just getting sick, not having the resources available. But there are definitely lives lost because of the predators. And Andrew reveals a lot about that and how in his training program with Ed Dames, they were, you know, taught how to really guard themselves and protect themselves against the predators. And he tells a lot of those type of stories in his interviews, which is very interesting.
You have been at this enough now that you've had time to get a sampling, at least, of responses to the things that you say about Mars. And I'm sure that not everyone has been kind. I'm sure not everyone has expressed that they believe what you're saying. And you've probably run into some pretty negative stuff as you've told your story about being recruited for this colony. How has that affected you? Has it affected you at all?
Well, I kind of expected it. I mean, I could only tell my story and tell the truth about what I went through and how much, you know, it involves very difficult things for a lot of people to digest, including mind control and certain technologies that have been hidden from us, including, you know, well, let's see, for example, psychotronic weaponry, certain ways that they mind control through artificial telepathy, and then things connected to military abductions, and the list goes on. And so I can only tell my story based on my experience, but I was the type of person before all this happened to me that was listening to other people's stories and definitely scratching my head about some of the weird things that I've heard myself and have felt sort of skeptical. But myself, the way I handle it is I have an open mind and I choose to respect that person's truth. So, of course, it is difficult when, you know, people attack me and they get angry at me because they don't want to believe the stuff that I'm saying. It's that whole shooting the messenger, and in my case, also the experiencer. But the reason it doesn't affect me is because I'm speaking truth. And, you know, what I share about other whistleblower stories, I only share based on knowing them for a long time and hearing their stories so consistently over the months and courses of years that the shadow of doubt and the evidence beyond a reasonable doubt is such that I feel comfortable sharing it. For example, Andrew Bishago and I have been colleagues, you know, for over a year and have been in many conference calls and many one-on-one conversations or in groups where nobody's listening at all. And the consistency, the articulation, and the intelligence and the passion behind everything that he's doing is so strong that after all this time, you know, maybe having a part of me just have a few questions, not so much doubts, but you know, because I can sense his integrity, but just a few questions. You know, I've been really just feeling safe to communicate a lot of what he shared because I feel the honesty and I feel that it links up to my story so strongly that it's helped me connect a bunch of dots. And, you know, I was identified in 1972 by Project Pegasus. before I was even born. And some of the people that were involved in the Mars recruitment, in my particular experience, are connected to, you know, Project Pegasus and DARPA. So, you know, I feel comfortable sharing other people's stories as long as I've been exposed to it long enough and to that person long enough to feel very confident. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I might direct people to have an open mind to other, you know, other folks that I might not have gotten to know that can you know, speak on the same subject. But personally, yeah, I mean, I find it a little bit difficult, but I tend to have a lot of compassion for the difficulty that people go through when they try and digest this type of information. And I can only do what I feel is necessary, because the thing is, I could have gone to Mars and it could have protected me from some sort of cataclysm or planned New World Order, you know, false flag string of events, and all sorts of things that they have planned for us on Earth. I could have protected myself and gone off with those that we feel very oppressed by. But in my nature, that's not the right thing to do, and I don't believe in it, and I don't believe that Mother Earth wants us to abandon her. I know that these are all hidden agendas, and I feel very strong about my mission and have, you know, my whole life. So I feel more uplifted by living my truth, living my passion, and feeling healed by not having it all repressed and not all hidden, that it's far greater for me to just have this opportunity and chance than be silent. And I'm happy to take on all the attacks than have nobody know this at all. Mm-hmm. And, you know, kind of play the role of not wanting to alarm anybody. And I knew after I went through this that I would have to speak about it, and that, yes, there would be backlash for sure.
Has there ever been a point in time here since you began talking about this and revealing about Mars, has there ever been a point at which just Laura Eisenhower by herself, alone and thinking, that you ever said to yourself, you know, I really should have gone to Mars?
That's a great question. No, actually, no. I had a very prophetic dream early on when I started to hear about the Mars thing, and my partner, you know, who's set up. If people haven't heard my story, this agent who I met at a festival, I didn't know he was sent on a mission to recruit me to Mars until 9 months into the relationship. I knew about the Mars agenda and the recruitment, but I didn't know that he was specifically sent to recruit me. I thought we met and fell in love and it was an invitation, like, hey, you want to go to Mars now that we're in love? It was actually all pre-planned, and that he had actually shown up at the event to specifically take me to Mars. And so early on, you know, before I even knew that he was specifically sent, I had had a dream, very, very lucid dream, so real, you know, it might as well have happened, where I was taken up into a ship by the Mars recruiters. And this was before I even knew the details or even the deeper agenda. And there was a voice from the sky that told me to make a choice. They said, you could either choose the path that you know is the path that you're on, you know, your mission that you were born with, or you can go with these guys and help them reseed a new civilization, and they will control you. And, of course, that was easy at that point, and I made the choice, and I plunged back into the water, and I realized my partner was still in the ship, and so I tried to get back up to grab him and bring him with me, but there was lightning and thunder, and I couldn't, and I just ended up in the water by myself. And I swam off to shore, and there was an alignment with the planets, and this organic light just filled the sky, and I just knew in my heart that I had made the right choice. Well, this was early on in the whole thing, and I just held on to that, and I held on to that just, you know, that just confidence in my decision and just in my awareness and just knowing that I was doing the right thing. And it gave me the strength to just allow myself to go through whatever I needed to go through and hear what I had to hear and eventually physically break away. And it was not easy, but the fact that I started to find out what these people were all about and what they were linked to based on doing weeks of research, when I started to talk about it is when they started to leave me alone and let me, you know, they let me go. So, you know, there are times where I feel attacked and I feel like, you know, with the oil spill and all these disasters going on and feeling, you know, just this toxic world and so many people that just, you know, complain, but they're not really doing the soul work. They're not really caring about each other. And I just, you know, and all that chaos and just feeling like, wow, you know, we really are in trouble. You would think in that moment, well, you know, you should have gone to Mars because you might be safe and you might have been able to do this and do that. And no, never. I mean, I'm just kind of, my attitude is whatever happens to Mother Earth, I'm with her. And I just merge my creative energy with her, and whatever happens, I'm just in that flow and I'm just in that co-creation. And what I can do, and the only thing that I can do, is do what I'm doing right now. And all the support that I'm getting means the world to me. But like I said, in my darkest days and when I'm really having a hard time and it just seems like, you know, the days that we all want to escape and just get the F off this planet, it's not Mars I'm thinking of. I'm thinking more of like the heavens and, you know, just source energy. Because I know all too well, based on mythology, based on just the celestial body Mars, based on these agendas and how they connect to our ancient history, the Archons, the Reptilians, and this very, very long, long drawn out agenda that's been in the works for thousands of years, that really, you know, took root with Alternative 3 in the 50s when Eisenhower was president, that this was definitely not the route. And it is so ingrained in my cellular makeup and in my soul matrix that this was the wrong thing, that I've never doubted myself ever about going to Mars. I know that eventually, you know, we're going to be connected to our universal family and we'll be able to travel throughout the cosmos, but not under their terms, under our own terms, because that was all done with control. The fact that there's all these agendas of mind control means that none of us, or at least those that are under that spell or that technological manipulation, are not following their true purpose. They're you know, being used.
Yeah, they're being programmed.
Yeah, and so that has not given us the chance to manifest what we're here to do. And so the best thing that I can do while I'm here is to expose those programs, those projects, the ritual abuse and everything that's going on, and just to continue doing all that I can to help lift the veils and, you know, just empower love and unity, because it's about frequency, energy, and vibration. And, you know, if we can really heighten that the backlash will start to happen and justice will take place. So, yeah, there's never any doubt. I'm so fueled by my passion to do what I'm doing here. Whether people like it or not, it doesn't affect it. It just would be nice if people could be a little kinder, but that's okay, because, you know, eventually they might go through whatever growth or whatever awakening they need to, and they might come back and apologize. But if not, that's okay, because I forgive them. It's okay.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. You know, the first person to raise the curtain and allow the public to peek behind the curtain into the dark world was President Eisenhower. The first person in American history was President Eisenhower in his farewell address. Laura, when we went away for break, you know, I had just made the point that I think it's just sort of cool that, you know, the very first person to warn us about these the dark side of what was going on was your great granddad, as he made his farewell address to the nation. And as a matter of fact, I should have queued that up. I've got the video of that. I should have queued it up to show it tonight. Great speech, and he warned us about the dangers and actually the evils of the military-industrial complex. And now here, his great-granddaughter is out talking about the same thing from a different perspective, but the same thing. How much do you know about your great-granddad?
I've gotten to know so much more than I ever imagined, so much more than what the history books say and what I learned from my family. You know, really starting when I was young, I was deeply connecting to his spirit and just really just feeling his presence all the time. And I was just getting opened up more and more to just what was going on the planet, just through observation, through just sensing in my own being this immense level of imbalance, not just on an energetic level of the masculine and feminine powers, but just, you know, I just felt like everything was on a program or like run by a CD, or just like people were operating, you know, under some level of control without knowing it, and that they were perfectly content doing so. And I was just incredibly alienated on a lot of levels. And so, you know, in those times, he would just kind of, you know, his presence was there kind of keeping me company. And I just got led on this journey of really understanding the extraterrestrial side of it, and, you know, just more about his nature as a being, you know, about the war, and just, you know, moving over to the American government and becoming president, and how what he thought was, you know, victory was actually not quite the case, and that the war had kind of morphed into our American government and was actually right under his nose. And when he began to wake up to this and realize this, there wasn't a whole lot that he could do or say until the farewell address. So, I mean, a lot of insights came to me on an intuitive level, and as a researcher trying to put the dots together and to validate my own intuition, I discovered a lot. Got to know him more as a being, got to know, you know, the history and the truth of the history a lot better. And of course, there's always gray areas, and I always, you know, want people to know that, even though I feel really confident about the information I share, you know, how accurate it is, there's definitely some gray areas, but overall, I would say that the main body of my research that really opened my eyes to what he was dealing with has come from folks like Dan Burrish and the whistleblowers of Area 51 and the scientists that used to work for MJ-12 that, you know, were really clued into the extraterrestrial presence and their communication with the government. And through other whistleblowers, you know, ones that had become super soldiers that have been in projects starting from childhood, who know a lot of inside information and are very compromised being under such massive control, which is, you know, really quite devastating, have revealed that treaties have been going on between extraterrestrials and the government since the 1940s, starting with Roosevelt. And by the time Eisenhower came about, there was already a lot of what he was saying was Draco-reptilian control in the government, and that he wasn't really making any decisions, but he was just being used as the front man. But he didn't really have any power. The power was, you know, pretty much the military and the Pentagon, and that was the effect of Project Paperclip and the Nazi scientists moving into the American government, which actually was rooted in the 1940s in some of those treaties, because we have to realize that a lot of what's going on has to do with extraterrestrials of a lower nature. Of course, there's higher races as well, but when we're dealing with treaties, we're not dealing with higher races, because they're needing to create agreements based on the survival of their species. And so it goes way into that. It gets really deep into that, and I won't, you know, completely and totally go there. But the point is, there was just this awakening to the fact that the people that he thought he could trust that were on the same side actually weren't. And I just feel like I'm opening up more and more to maybe what he was really dealing with, knowing that the Zionists and the Nazis are very much merged, and that the whole creation of war in and of itself is a lie and a false flag, you know, for profit. And that we end up on the tail end of it all, or on the other side of it all, dealing with, you know, concepts like Jews and Nazis and Germans and, you know, all these races and people having, you know, issues with racism and resentment about our history based on this war. But in actual fact, these were all set up to cause a lot of division amongst us, so that we wouldn't fight and fight and see ourselves as a global family, that we would get our history, these wars, and create and resentment. And you know, religion does the same thing, so that you know, they can easily pull the strings. But in actual fact, they're the ones that created all of this. And this is what I've been coming to understand. I don't have it all down to a science, but I do see that they use people, and I feel that in the sense that he might have been used because of his passion and his love for humanity, his desire for peace, and seeing what the Nazis were doing. Of course, he wanted to stop that. So in that sense, the war was real to him, but there's so many deeper layers and deeper layers. They did something similar to me, and I call it positive false flags. They have the negative false flags that connect to 9/11 and, you know, trying to create fear in us of terrorists, but then they have positive false flags where they feed on our hopes and our desires and our purposes. And they did this with the ex that wanted to recruit me to Mars, and they tried to do this with me when they posed this as, you know, this is helping the human race to protect the human genome and go to Mars, and, you know, we'll give you a powerful position, and, you know, just kind of trying to, you know, weasel me into this thing, making me, you know, trying to connect with that part of me that really does want to serve humanity, that really does care. And so I feel like they've done that to a lot of people. And so when that started to happen, a big red flag came up, and I said, you know what, the game is going to end here, because this is what the military-industrial complex is all about. It's about false flags. They feed on our hopes, they feed on our fears, and if we don't find the middle ground and be in present time and have the knowledge and awareness that can keep us from projecting our hopes and keep us from falling into our fears, then we're a lot safer, because they do feed on both. And so I feel like I've gotten to know so much based on my Mars recruitment, based on connecting as a family member, you know, to this family, growing up looking at family albums of him, you know, visiting these camps and, you know, just flipping through when you're like 11 years old, you know, trying to get a grasp on your family's history on top of digging into layers that most family members won't go, I would say I have a pretty broad multidimensional perspective on things. On top of the fact that my recruitment had to do with archetypes, things connected to, you know, deeper layers. And, you know, people have to understand that we're not just dealing with politics. These people are connected to rituals. They work with the occult. And that's why I think people have had a hard time with my story, because they say, you know, you're connecting all these dots, but how can these things be in the same family? How can you talk about UFOs and then talk about archetypes and myth? How do these things even connect? How can you talk about the government and the shadow government and then talk about things like the divine feminine? Well, people have to understand that it all does connect. In their world, once you harness the laws of nature, physics, and the occult, you can pretty much manipulate everybody and play God. And that's what they've been doing behind the curtain. So it's not just about disclosure. We don't need Obama to just tell us there's extraterrestrials. We need to be comfortable with that and ask the deeper questions, what has been going on behind our back this whole time? Because it's not just about revealing that there's extraterrestrials. There's been a lot going on, you know, and power structure has been manipulated, that's why they won't disclose. So, you know, we have to start looking at those deeper questions and kind of get over, you know, these initial areas, because it's we don't have that much time. So no, I guess to answer your question is, I feel I'm so deeply connected in so many ways to all of this, and I'm just, you know, I'm here learning like everybody else and, you know, open-minded enough to correct myself if I'm wrong, but some of this stuff has been so clear and in my face that I don't have many doubts about a lot that I share.
All right, well, let me ask you about a story that all of us have heard, and it has been talked about and debated on shows like mine since before I was listening to shows like mine, back when I was a child. And by the way, I am old enough that I remember when your great-granddad was president. He was president when I was born, and he was still president when I hit first grade.
Wow.
Yeah. And my dad used to point him out, you know, when he would be on television. My dad would point him out, you know, and he would say, "Son, remember this man. This is a great man."
Oh.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. And so I remember that. But one of the stories that's been debated, as I say, since before I was even listening to shows like mine, is the story that Ike had a meeting with extraterrestrials. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, that's one of those tough questions, because I mean, nobody in my family talks about it. And, you know, I do clairvoyant readings. I'm very intuitive. We all are clairvoyant, of course, but, you know, I really, you know, made it a practice to really just stay in my clear seeing and clairvoyance, to just be able to see energy and truth more easily. And so I, you know, studied that and how to refine that. And, you know, when I address this to my family, I really do feel their sincerity in their answer. But I'm shocked, because they still think he went to a dentist. And I'm thinking, okay, it just doesn't quite line up for me. And so I dig deeper than, you know, the surface things that I hear. And I dig deeper than the rumors that I hear that this is exactly what happened. And I go as far as I can with it until something makes sense. And I do, you know, really do feel that this happened. I think there are more than one race. I think he met with three altogether. There were three specific meetings, the third one being in the 1960s with the Venetians, which makes sense to me because the Venus energy is so important right now, connected to the Mayan calendar and the Venus transits and the return of just a heart-centered, unified consciousness and wisdom, of course. So, you know, they supposedly met with these Venetians, and the government refused to disclose any information about it because they were afraid that people wouldn't need the government anymore, because this information was so profound and so uplifting and so much the truth that, you know, it was completely unavailable. And I can't say for certain if that even happened, but the reason it makes sense is because without even realizing, you know, until maybe a couple of years ago that this encounter happened, I've been writing about Venus and connecting to that energy, you know, since the beginning. And my whole chart is very much Venus ruled, and so I just have a strong affinity to anything Venetian. The recruiters, one who kind of defected, had said something about three magi visiting Eisenhower, and somehow it was connected to Venus, and that they had mentioned something about his descendant that would be born. And then, you know, the conversation kind of cut off, and, you know, I was asking more questions, and I wasn't getting a lot of answers, but, you know, the latest email was that the Mars recruitment had to do with time travel, reseeding a new civilization, and removing me from Earth for whatever reason, but that the Venetians, or the three Magi, who I think were the Venetians, excuse me, had said something about his descendant being born that was connected to Venus. And that's all I'll say on the subject, because anything more would be speculation. Anything more would be me inserting maybe my opinions and thoughts, but that's about as factual as I can get. As far as, you know, what we hear about, and I think it was 54, Edwards Air Force Base, supposedly there's something called the Ultra. It was a group not associated, I don't think, with MK Ultra, but that they were the main folks that allowed the treaty to take place, which was the similar type of treaty that Roosevelt dealt with in the 1940s that supposedly gets renewed every 10 years. And by the time Eisenhower was confronted with this type of treaty, it wasn't his initiation, it wasn't his will or total decision to sign it or to agree, but it was this group. But, you know, on the other hand, say he did sign it. You know, one has to also consider that he had just been in this war. And, you know, you're hearing, you know, the Nordics, perhaps the first encounter, say something about if we remove these weapons and this and that, you know, the Greys will be gone. And then the second encounter, you know, basically saying, well, if we can abduct a certain amount of people, you know, we'll exchange these technologies. Well, these are what the rumors say, that it was first a positive encounter that was turned down and then something connected to these abductions. Well, when we, you know, really take a deeper look, we don't even know for certain if these higher races are completely legitimate, if there's any deception involved, because the Nordics made an agreement with the reptilians way back when. And that's what created the Aryan race, which are hybrids, which allow the reptilians to possess the 13 families, which is the Illuminati. So it's hard to all of a sudden say, well, the Nordics must have been presenting something positive.
We were talking about this thing, about whether there actually was a meeting or meetings between your great-granddad, President Eisenhower, and extraterrestrials. Do you, and you said you think that from what you've been able to put together, you think there were three meetings. How do you think it affected him?
Gosh, I think it was so heavy. You know, and like I said, I mean, this is just based on, you know, research and intuition. I can't say for certain what exactly happened, but it just feels like this is what happened because of so many whistleblowers and so many contactees and so many stories and years of just putting my head into this. And I can imagine, I mean, I've looked at pictures and I just see him just with the weight of the world on his shoulders and just so much pressure. He had 8 heart attacks, 4 of which I think happened while he was in office. You know, not just the pressure of keeping secret, but also realizing that a lot of his advisors were not necessarily coming from the same place as he was, as far as viewpoints, philosophies, care and concern for humanity. You know, and I think just grasping, you know, an extraterrestrial presence alone is very difficult. I mean, I've heard stories about people going into underground bases that have to be drugged just so that they can handle encountering these beings that are there. I myself am not a contactee. I did have a visitation when I was a child, preparing me, you know, for the path ahead, connecting me to, you know, to the awareness of the positive timeline and to hold on to that for dear life. So I do, you know, I can't really question these things, and a lot of my close friends are contactees, and I've just heard so many stories. But I think on the levels that he was dealing with it, you know, when you're dealing with the world and making decisions that affect everybody, I just can't even imagine. And, you know, I think that people just really need to put themselves in his shoes if they feel at all critical. I mean, and also realize that we might not have the full story. Because you're dealing with something off-planet that had technologies and abilities that we haven't really grown into yet. We have to also understand that the Greys and the ones that created these treaties are connected to the P-52s and the P-45s that Dan Burrs talks about. If nobody has, you know, followed his research at all, I would definitely look into it, because he really does talk about these treaties. He really does talk about the type of races and beings, and he says that they're future human selves, that they're actually time-traveling back to create treaties so that there can be exchanges of technologies, and that these abductions have to do with helping their race replenish itself or regenerate, because as we see, Greys look very much like they've degenerated, their skin and everything. I mean, that's pretty much what happened to these beings after being in underground bases and in off-planet colonies, is that that's the form that they turned into, and that the P-45 and the P-52 means that much into the future, 45,000 years into the future, or 52,000 years into the future. And UFOs are time travels, and they are coming back. And one might consider that, you know, the ones that don't look like that, that look healthier, like higher races, might be our future human selves that have already ascended. That is just a theory that I've come up with. We have to understand that time is not linear. Time is more of an invention. It's like a technology. When we're dealing with hidden government stuff, they're dealing in teleportation and time travel, which means they're not ruled by the same laws that we are when it comes to aging and time and just this whole time matrix. Of course, the Mayan calendar connects to the end of time, not the end of the world. So anyway, I think, you know, just grasping, just first of all, being president, second of all, these groups that were pretty much created to maintain secrecy or to control the amount of knowledge and information about UFOs and extraterrestrials, the CIA, of course, the Jason Group, MJ-12, you know, to be exposed to that and to be a part of those groups and to realize, you know, that the military forces, not the military that he was accustomed to, but the military extraterrestrial industrial complex was growing, and that, you know, the military man that he was and the principles that he had as a person that really did want to serve our country was waning away, and that's, you know, where the warning came in. So I think the pressure of adding extraterrestrial energies to that, that pretty much happened early on in his presidency, you know, must have been an unbelievable amount of stress to handle, particularly when you don't have a lot of control and you're being called president and everybody's counting on you and you're the one who's taking the blame or the flack for everything that's going on, which is what he's kind of dealing with now, even though he's passed away. You know, I think there's disinformation about, you know, the prisoner, the death camps. I think there's disinformation about, of course, the treaties and the visitations. I can only say I think that there were three because I've heard of three, but the one that I believe in most are the Venetians and, you know, the thing about abductions, because there's no way that we would be hearing these kind of stories unless there was some sort of thing that involved this, because it's not just extraterrestrials. It's they're using humans and the extraterrestrials have agreements. Also, alternative three in the colonization on Mars was implemented then, and humans would not have the know-how to colonize another planet unless they had extraterrestrial assistance and technologies. And so what's the secrecy is that there's alien technologies being used that are far more advanced than the technologies that we know of, but if they're coming from future human selves, then they're just trying to keep a certain timeline going in order to validate their race and what they've become and to try and heal them in the future. And it's so complicated, and I'm sure so many people are just like, oh my gosh, what is she talking about? It can make a person crazy. Researching it is just like, oh my gosh, you know, one gets flooded. So I'm only sharing this for people to say, okay, well, maybe they should research it more. But as far as, you know, holding me to the information and getting angry at me, I'm just reiterating it. And my curiosity is based on signs and things that were shown to me that led me to believe that the things that I've researched have a lot of validity, and that's why I bring them to the forefront and to expression.
You have, as a matter of fact, you talked about this a little bit. You were beginning to go public more when you were on this show before, and you were talking about being recruited for the Mars colony. You were also at that point beginning to be more public in your sort of campaign for making life on Earth sustainable. And you've been very public about that since then. You've been very active in talking about that. We've got about a minute here before we go to break. Let's go ahead and get into that. Why do you think life on Earth is not sustainable? It's been here for thousands of years.
It's not that I don't think it's sustainable. It just needs our focus and attention. We have to expose these projects and you know, ask ourselves, where is the trillions of dollars going? Why was 9/11 a false flag? You know, and people have to start to grasp that it was a false flag if they don't believe it already. And the architects and engineers for 9/11, when that film comes out, I would encourage everybody to watch it, because these aren't conspiracy theorists. These are experts in their field who are saying, this is impossible. This never happened. Something else is going on. You know, and this connects to the trillions of dollars that went into MK weapons. This connects to the whole scenario of false flags, period, that has been happening in our history. And this whole manipulation of control and New World Order, and why there's oil spills, and why there's disasters. disasters that are hitting nuclear power plants and poisoning the air. So, of course, Earth is sustainable, but we're watching her getting poisoned. We're watching us all being fooled. And it's all for a specific agenda that does not care about planet Earth and does not care about our health and well-being and only cares to control. And the thing is, it goes off planet, it goes into other galaxies, and we need to call them on it. In order to preserve this Earth and to make sure it's sustainable, because it is being threatened. And the divine feminine energies are specifically targeted, and I can go into that more of why I know this, and there's a lot of hidden information connected to that. I know we have a break, and I don't want to, you know, talk so much that I don't allow it to transition, but...
Okay, well, that's a good place for us to break right there. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. This is Kevin Smith, and my guest this evening is Laura Eisenhower. Those of you who are joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. I'm delighted you are here. I'm glad you finally made it. My sincere sympathy to you for whatever it is that kept you away for that first hour. But we're glad you're here now, and we are talking with Laura Eisenhower. She is the great-granddaughter of President Ike Eisenhower. She's been a guest on our show before, and when she was here, she told us about being recruited for a survival colony on Mars. It was something that a lot of people had a lot of trouble with at first, but it has, it's a story that a lot of folks that had trouble with it at first have grown to find some acceptance because of the story, because other people have stepped forward and begun to talk about the same thing. There's kind of widespread acceptance of it now. Now, when we went away for break, Laura, we had just started talking about, I had asked a question relative to your work in working for making life sustainable here on this planet. I had asked the question, so why do you think it's not sustainable? And you were answering that, well, it is sustainable, but we're basically being poisoned and we're being deceived and fooled into doing things that are killing the planet. And you said that this goes off planet, and the roots of this go off planet and, in fact, into other galaxies. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess, I don't know if I said the roots go off planet, but in a sense, yes, they do. Because, you know, this Earth was invaded a long time ago. You know, in Sumerian times, the whole Anunnaki thing, even though there's positive and negatives in that, this was really when the Earth was invaded, and everything really changed. So we don't really have to worry about any more invasions. We have to figure that we've already been invaded. And now it's about, you know, a positive shift, you know, an awakening, you know, exposing what's been hidden from us and you know, really the truth coming out. And that's something that we all have to participate in. As far as... these other things, you know, in this invasion, we can't look at anything as separate, because if we keep saying, you know, aliens, extraterrestrials, we keep thinking it's an us and them, or that it's something that, you know, that makes us victims. So we have to start to see, you know, that this is sort of like a parasitic invasion. It's something that wants to control us, something that doesn't really have morals, similar to like cancer or some kind of parasite that needs a host to feed on. So obviously we need to look at what are we doing that allows us to be used in this way, and that's why the real work is the inner work. But yes, I mean, Earth is sustainable, but when we think about the ritual abuse that takes place and how it's done to affect grid lines on the planet, you know, how they use astrology to pick very powerful days in order to do this, the way that they use the occult and their knowledge of archetypes and numerology and everything like that, it's really to take us out of our natural connection to Gaia. And when we see the media and the things played out on TV, it's obviously that they want people possessed. They want us to function from our lower being. They want us to emulate their lower vibration because they thrive on it. So in a sense, this invasion has to do with turning us into something that they can live off of. As long as we're in fear, as long as we're running lower energies, as long as we disrespect women or, you know, want to have power and control, as long as we emulate these lower forces, then we're a part of the problem, and we're actually, we might as well call ourselves agents of them, and that we're co-creating and participating with this and our own self-annihilation. And so what we are invaded with, a lot of people, you know, sign up for and feel, you know, are almost desensitized and don't even realize that they're helping further these agendas. People are very cynical about Mother Earth. You know, they make fun of people who are really connected to the planet. Most people are driven, and I'm not trying to make generalizations here, but a lot of people are driven by money and material wealth, and they think anybody who's really into living close to the Earth or like that, you know, it's just kind of laughable, or it just has sort of a cynical response in the mainstream. And of course, all that's changing, and we don't want to pay attention to what anybody thinks, period. But these are parts of the programmings and parts and a part of the control that's out there. And people have to look at themselves. Where are they adopting these mentalities? Where are they serving these agendas? And where are they, you know, helping facilitate this this poisoning of Mother Earth and this destruction of our higher self and this separation between us and God? And that's why our DNA has been affected, because they're trying to create, you know, the veil in our DNA that represents our God self, and then throw it at us as a religion so that we have to look to it. And then they turn us off so much that people are either religious or they're atheists. They can't find that middle ground of just being spiritual beings that are doing the work to help reactivate the lost DNA and to help restore the lost divine feminine and to help restore our planet. And that's really where the real work is. And when people really focus on that, they're really free. They've really broken free. So this is kind of what we're being threatened with, but it's an inner war at this point. We have to look at ourselves and really step it up. And, you know, find that unity, find more integration, and take that kind of responsibility. Because once each being does that, that's what's going to overthrow it, because the physical planet Gaia is no different than the physical human body. The same laws and principles apply. It's just as vulnerable to being attacked and having control entities and parasitic entities come at it as a physical being is when they draw on the wrong relationships, or they eat the wrong food, or they go through a traumatic event and their aura leaks and they let in, you know, negative energies or demonic energies. So as a collective, you know, this is our responsibility to look at the whole. It's not just dirt and water. It's not just a planet. It's a conscious, multidimensional being that we live upon, that is the macro of us, that we, you know, we have the same type of energetics. The false matrix disconnects us from this, and this is what the threat is. So to create a sustainable Earth, we need to connect ourselves with what counts and deprogram and really you know, step up to create justice. Everybody's got a different role. I'm not saying that, you know, you must do this, you must do that, but at least we have to, you know, focus on what we need to do to be healthier beings, to create better relationships, to understand what the sacredness of life is, and to not let all this kind of happen and be in acceptance of it and just say, oh, it'll sort itself out.
Yeah, well, it won't sort itself out. I guess the best thing we could say about the idea that it will sort itself out is the standard question. Yeah, well, how's that working out for you folks? I want to open up the telephone lines and allow our audience to join the conversation. And, folks, you need to write this number down, because I won't be giving this number anymore unless just by accident I happen to say it. I don't want to take up a lot of time giving out the telephone number and sounding like I'm begging you to call. If you want to call, you can do it. And if you don't want to call, sit on your fingers. Here's the number, 623-444-5889. Once again, 623-444-5889. Now, if you're in the USA or Canada, use that number. And if you're outside the USA or Canada, either use that number or you can send us a flash message. Go to my website, scroll down till you see the picture about tonight's show, and right above it you'll see the link to send me a flash message, okay? So let's go to the telephone and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Ryan in Puget Sound.
Yeah, Ryan.
Yeah, Laura, I was wondering, is your mother, your mom still working with the current administration?
I'm not going to answer any questions about my mom. I have a boundary for that. So I don't even know the answer. And if I did, I really am not going to talk about her. I told her, I promised.
I see. I understand.
Thank you.
You know, I wonder if, now, the other question is, when they were talking about sending arcs to Mars, did they say that this is going to be done in total secrecy, or was this going to be open to the public?
This aspect was going to be done in secrecy. I was told to not say a word to anybody during the recruitment process. But then something else was being opened up on a surface level. It's similar to NASA and the secret space program. NASA reveals a certain truth, but then something way different is going on behind the scenes. So there was something connected to Google XPRIZE and trips to Mars. That was, you know, kind of the surface layer. They all had kind of surface jobs too, but they were hiding all this other stuff going on, you know, secret meetings, you know, because he would get codes on the telephone and disappear, you know, for days and sometimes at night, you know, in the middle of the night. And then I later read that sometimes that's when these rituals or meetings happen, you know, on a very dark level. But yeah, there were certain aspects that they were planning on exposing, but then there was a whole bunch of it that was a different story that was going to be kept in secrecy. This is what I gathered.
Well, that's very interesting, and you know, they just conducted a test flight where they had mock passengers to Mars that did a fake invasion to, or not invasion, but a trip to Mars, and they're just now returning on it. Anyways, it's a very interesting story, and I was wondering one more question, Laura. Would you consider running for president since there's nobody else running right now that's worth it, 5 cents?
Yeah, it's funny. Somebody opened a Facebook page, Laura for president in 2012. Certainly not ready in 2012, but 2016, my colleague Andrew Bishago is more than likely going to run, and I will be completely supporting him and really getting involved along with him. Me alone running for president? I would definitely shake things up because I do not have a dream for government if I didn't pass any government tests in high school. So, I mean, it would definitely be a different energy if I came. But I'm willing to take any stand that I need to. So, if that's what I'm in, then I absolutely will.
Okay, Ryan, thanks for the call.
Well, Laura, you said you don't have a brain for government. You know something? That might be exactly what we need. That might be exactly what we need. Totally clear the table, and let's just start over clean. That might be the way to go. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin and Laura.
Hi.
My name is Larry from Illinois.
Hello, Larry.
And I really appreciate this interview. This has got to be one of the best. Laura, you're courageous, and thank you for coming forward.
Oh, thank you so
my
much.
My one question for Laura is, you say we don't have much time. So I'm kind of wondering what you mean by that.
Well, I definitely don't say that to cause anybody any fear, but it's more, you know, just to kind of motivate and just, you know, get us all excited that this is the time, you know, to really step up. We've got the Occupy movement, and we really don't want to just talk about the surface complaints of corporate greed and all the injustices. I mean, that's important, but we really want to go deeper and really show in these signs and billboards and in the things that we talk about, because I haven't, you know, I'm willing to talk at one of these things, but to really go deeper and really call them out on all of this, because there are some seeds of manipulation even in the Occupy movement where they could, you know, initiate martial law and, you know, plant some sort of, you know, protester that creates all sorts of havoc and leads them to take a step that would be taking us further away from the goal. So I think it's very important that we call them out on the false flags, you know, the New World Order agenda, on the super soldier programs, on the MK Ultra projects, you know, like Monarch and Mannequin and Talent and all these, you know, projects, and to really, you know, take it to that level if we're already out there on the streets. And so when I say running out of time, I guess I more mean let's make the most of the fact that people are talking, people are waking up, people are angry, and people have had enough. So, you know, I think we can, you know, even go further. And I guess running out of time, too, it's you know, this is about us and our own soul work. We want to just make sure that we've done the inner work, that our intuition is strong enough to know the difference between fact and fiction, to know that when the economy crumbles, which might be a controlled thing, that everything's going to collapse, that we don't look to anybody but ourselves to rebuild it, that we start to unify and look to each other and not see what the government's going to do or see what hero that they appoint. Because I tell you, I highly doubt that anybody in the public eye that's going to come save the day is going to be legit. We need to look to each other and stop looking to them, because anything that's public is usually no good, just like anything the FDA approves is usually bad for us, and everything that's banned is usually good. So it's all a big reversal, and we can, you know, reverse it in our favor if we stop looking to them. So I guess running out of time – is more to motivate us and get us excited to just, you know, not wait or wait for a savior or wait for somebody else to do it, that we all have something very unique and specific on top of the fact that our collective purpose is to just be free.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Thank you very much, and I'm going to hang up now and let somebody else get in. Keep it up. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call. Laura, I'm going to teach you, you probably already know this, but play along with me on this. I'm going to teach you the most powerful, magical, impressive, effective spell that anybody can ever say.
Okay.
All right. Repeat after me. You ready?
Yep.
No.
No.
There you go. It's the most powerful word in human language. Every dictator is finished when his people say no.
Yay.
All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Hi, Laura, and hi, Kevin. This is Victoria. I'm calling from Washington.
Hello, Victoria.
And sounds like you've been through quite a lot, and I really admire your strength. And I have one question. And that is, how do you overcome your fear? I mean, there has to be fear attached to some of the really frightening things that you have to face up to, and what process or what thought process or what technique or whatever do you use to get centered? I know getting centered in the earth is one thing, but I just can't seem to anchor into that and find a sense of peace and calm and I'm constantly feeling under attack by these other forces that you've kind of mentioned tonight, and it makes me afraid to go one way or the other. And I don't know whether it's, I don't know what direction to go sometimes, and so I guess I'd like to know what your process is, and I guess I'll listen to your answer.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Well, you know, it's weird. When it came to them, for some reason, I didn't fear them, and that really pissed them off, I'm sure. I guess, you know, it was like, you know, when you're on your path and you're really focused on your mission and you have a specific goal, I almost felt like I hit the gold, like, okay, these are the guys that I need to deal with. This is the root of it. So I almost had this strange excitement, even though it was mixed with anger, mixed with just the passion for justice and the passion to put an end to it all. I was so focused on that I didn't have time to fear. It was just sort of like I just, you know, it said to the universe, take me to those beings, whatever's trying to control us and control me, because they had been on me for a long time. I was targeted way before, you know, the recruitment happened. I was taken other places, of course, but there was not a lot of control I had in my life, and I felt probably like you do, where, you know, there was just something going on, I couldn't put my finger on it. And of course, it was inevitable that I would find these folks, you know, because that's what their plan was, but I was really, you know, excited to find them, because I knew that once I dealt with the root of it, I would yank it out, and I would feel a lot more free, a lot more liberated, and a lot more able to come forward. You know, even if two people were listening or 100, it didn't matter, but I would feel, you know, validated in the things that I was sensing from the time I was a child, that this earth is under massive control, not just on a technological, government, military, industrial complex level, but on a patriarchal level. And this is not about male bashing at all. You know, we bought into this kind of imbalance on some level. But so when I was really starting to hit the energies that were very much the root of it, that really represented, you know, those type of things, I was just excited to remove them. So that was the mentality. I not only had a boundary to it, anything uncomfortable that was hitting my space, I would just shield myself, like, no. I allowed my dreams to help me and guide me, and I let my anger not just whirl in my system and make me crazy. I just used it as a regenerative force, as a creative force, to propel me forward and to allow me to, you know, use it as like fire and a transformative energy to, you know, break free. And so I just, you know, was just very tuned into the energies coming at me, and that I was, you know, emitting, you know, where my weak points were, where they were, you know, able to manipulate me. And I just used this as a huge way to do my soul work, and that I wasn't making it an us and them. I was allowing myself to see what in me was allowing it, was vulnerable to it, and it went back, you know, lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes, and how, you know, we can look at the stories and we can be victims, or we can, you know, say, wait, I'm a warrior, I'm fighting against this, and there's going to be a point where we get to just be in our beingness, in our divine essence. And so, you know, during that period of my life, I was in the warrior mode. I was not going to let anybody push me around, control me, and I wasn't in fear of death, because I would say to them, you know, you can kill me, but what good is that going to do? Because, you know, and I've said this in other interviews, I'll reincarnate more pissed off, and you don't want to see me as a ghost, because I'll make your life miserable. So I, you know, once you get free of the fear of death, that's the first step. The second step is just to believe in yourself, your power, and the things you care about and the things that you love, and just fight on behalf of those things. Not in a way that's going to stoop you down to that level that they're functioning on, but that you forgive them and you integrate and you bring your power back. And you just rise and you just stand up and you just keep going until you exhaust them. And that's what I did. Doesn't mean that I'm not threatened right now, but the reason I don't really care is because I know I'm already free. Doesn't really matter at this point what they do, because they don't have my mind, they don't have my soul, and they don't have my heart. Anything else is a lesser thing anyway, and I'm not saying the physical is less, but once you know that you're free on all these other levels, there's not a whole lot they can do, because the veils are lifting between life and death as we know it. So, you know, just embrace the positive, embrace where you're heading, just really trust yourself. And if you need a reading or any kind of guidance from me, I on my website you'll see my services, and I can, you know, really get more in depth with this with you, and really help, because that's definitely my passion, is to help people find their center and find their strength.
Okay, Victoria, I don't know what happened. The system has a timer on it. I didn't mean to cut you off. I was trying to override the timer. But thank you for the call. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Jerome from Pennsylvania.
Hello, Jerome. Let me ask you a question. Just in case we run up against the break, is it okay if I put you on hold?
Sure.
Okay, well, we're not against the break now, so go ahead.
Okay, thank you. First of all, Kevin, I want to say that your father seemed like a very intelligent man. I know you alluded to some of the stuff he said previously. And, Laura, your grandfather I also hold in the same esteem as Kevin does. My question to you is, for all this greatness, all he could do was basically warn in his farewell speech about these controlling factors. It seems like even if you were president, you know, you wouldn't have any control there. So I think it's more for the masses to get, like you said, the love, you know, the reptilians, they thrive on the lower frequencies, and we have to raise ourselves.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a dangerous territory to even try and be president, but I think, you know, in this next election and in the next couple of years, a lot of changes are going to happen that are going to start to bring in more of the type of leaders that we want, you know, who can empower us as leaders. And I mean, that whole thing can change, because we have to realize that the earth needs an exorcism. It's invaded by demonic forces. All the rituals and all the things connected to what the Nazis did with their real power and using the energies of the black sun and all that, you know, connect to the free energy of the universe and just how they try and manipulate. So they conjure up demonic energies, and that's part of their thing. And I know that's hard for people to swallow. Unfortunately, I know too many whistleblowers and too many stories to have too many doubts on this. And so, you know, that's what's going to do it. You know, raising our frequencies, it's kind of like, you know, you bring in the essence of heaven in and you awaken the divine spark within. You know, what can they possibly thrive on? It just ejects them and ejects them. And so that's really, you know, our focus. That'll help clean up, you know, DC, it'll help clean up, you know, all these different power structures and help them crumble. But going in there and shaking a stick and expecting to get anywhere is not going to be as easy until we set the foundation with this kind of awareness. Because, you know, really, real quick, the myths tell the story on a soul level, and we see, you know, Persephone get abducted by Hades, so that part of all of us is hidden and exiled and taken away. Then we see the physical planet revealing it.
And we have on the telephone with us Jerome from Pennsylvania. Jerome, did you have another question or comment?
Yes, Kevin, thank you. Laura, are there any ETs that are actually trying to help us? And what leads me to ask that question is, Ed Grimsley does this night vision, not only him, but he does this night vision where he can see these space wars going on. And I was wondering if this is possibly what I'm going to refer to as good ETs versus the bad ETs that are enslaving us.
Well, there's definitely, you know, the Galactic Federation of Light, which has gotten all sorts of different, you know, people have said all sorts of different things, you know, have really been at war for a long time, you know, starting with Lyra and, you know, the Draco-Reptilian invasion during that time that it's been going on since then. So is that what Ed Grimsley's seeing? You know, I'm not totally sure. Is there intervention? Is there help from higher races? I absolutely believe that. But it doesn't, you know, there's a law of non-intervention, so it's not something they're going to do just for the sake of it or just, you know, without being asked. I mean, our connection to our higher self, you know, draws this energy to us. You know, this is like the law of attraction. Same thing, you know, when we eat well and we love and we're taking good care of ourselves, our immune system is boosted and things magically just heal versus, you know, staying in a lower state and allowing parasitic forces and cancers to grow. I mean, we're dealing with the same thing cosmically speaking on a multidimensional level as this is a cosmic ecosystem. So as we raise our consciousness and awareness, we'll find that we do draw in assistance from higher races because they see that. They feel drawn, you know, there's that attraction that, you know, and the invoking
why
of it. Well, we also have to think about what David Wilcock has been saying and others have been saying about the Andromeda Council, which is what Alfred Weber's been writing about, that certain underground bases have been destroyed and evacuated first and then destroyed. Some say with beams of light and others say that they've been nuked. And we're talking about, you know, quite a number of underground bases, including ones that are in the ocean. So there's definitely been a lot of signs of positive intervention, you know, a lot of motherships supposedly around the planet. So there definitely, I do think that there is that, but we want to, you know, also be careful because of any sort of deceptions, you know, but just to put our energy and focus on invoking that for sure. So I do think that there's assistance, and I think that this transformation has to do with the organic transformation, which we can call alchemy, which is kind of what I think the alchemy event is about. Not, you know, magic or alchemy on that level, but deep global alchemy where we're turning lead to gold. We're turning a very poisoned and suppressed and invaded planet with negative energies into gold, into the truth, into its highest state. And that happens on a physical level. It happens on a global level. So I think that intervention happens as long as we're stepping up to it and creating that change within ourselves and amongst each other, and that they do show up when we're committed to that. And when the masses really start to commit to that, we'll find that more of that intervention takes place and that it's not just going to happen. We don't just sit around and something's just going to come and solve it all for us. It's a part of our own process that attracts it. And I do think that that's going on, and there's been a lot of reports.
Laura, that's very encouraging. And thank you for being a guest on the Kevin Smith Show. You're a very elegant and thought-provoking speaker.
Thank you,
Kevin.
So much. Thanks.
Thank you. All righty. Laura, one of the things that, you know, you've described the help that comes in a way that I don't have any problem with that. One of the things that I've heard this about God, and I've heard this about ETs, about God. Well, if there really is a God, why does he let this happen? And I'm not a religious person, but I've always thought, what a stupid statement.
I know.
You know, if there really is a God, why does he even let you happen? Why does he let me happen? Okay? I mean, come on, folks. But the other one has to do with ETs and people saying, you know, talking about ETs coming to help us and certainly Jerome didn't do this, but I've heard this, coming to help us, sort of like they show up and they're the hero and they rescue us. And, you know, I don't see that happening. That's not going to happen. We are the ones who created the mess we're in. We have to create a future without this mess. And will they help us to do that? And you've said, yes, as we step up to it, it draws their assistance to us. All right, let's go to the telephone and caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Steve from Georgia.
Hello, Steve.
And, Kevin, you have knocked the ball out of the park again tonight.
Well, Laura has.
I'm a night shift worker, and when I'm home, my favorite thing to do is to pour myself a glass of wine, open up the internet, and listen to the Kevin Smith Show. And Kevin, you have done it again.
Well, Laura, thank you, but it's Laura.
Let me say, I salute your courage. I salute your opening up to all these things that are beyond the programming that they try to thrust on you from your childhood. I am an old Gnostic by persuasion and by orientation, and that means I'm tuned into Sophia. Sophia, the Gaia principle that solidified herself into our planet and has allowed us to live in her heart and on her surface. And I agree, the extraterrestrials are not our, they're not the solution to our problems. They are the introducers of our problems. They are a vampiric presence in our midst, and our solution lies in our consolidating our consciousness with the presence of Sophia, the spirit, omniscient, that dwells in the heart of reality. And it's a journey to get there, but it's a journey that invites us, beckons us, and loves us into a journey that will bring us there.
That's amazing, because I write about Sophia, I talk about Sophia, many references to my path have connected to Sophia, you know, the Venus thing, Magdalene, Ariadne, all the different aspects. And, you know, I'm so, John Lash is, you know, a friend of mine, and I love his work. And I do consider most extraterrestrial races archons, and that they are not here to help us. And they've actually, you know, the whole alien dreaming, and then the Gaia dreaming, the Sophia dreaming, and that's really where the truth is. What I consider to be higher races assisting us, I connect more with aeons, you know, like messengers, parts of our higher selves, extensions of who we are on a higher level. They don't just show up and help us. There is no savior, you know, or chosen one. You know, to me, Christ consciousness is available to all of us, and that's what, you know, brings us to a higher awareness. But it's Christ Sophia consciousness. It's about sacred union. It's about creating that balance within ourselves. Everything has to happen within before it's going to manifest on the external. So if anybody misunderstands me at all or thinks that I think there's going to be a second coming or the aliens are going to help, absolutely not. But I do think by nature of us rising into our higher consciousness that we attract the forces that help us to create change, just like our immune system helps us heal our injuries when we're doing the right things for our bodies and our spiritual health and everything that boosts that part of what we already are, that we already have that. We have an immune system, and the Venus transits and our connection on a heart level connects to the T cells, connects to the immune system, the thyroid gland, or the thymus gland, excuse me. So love alone and just unity consciousness is what raises the vibrations and has that healing level. You know, whatever entities show up has nothing to do with them just showing up because they want to. They show up because we created it. We manifested it. Just as much as we manifested the parasites coming in because we fell out of balance. But it starts with us, and then, you know, then all this ends up playing out. But I'm so glad you brought up Sophia, and if people check out my website, CosmicGaia2012.com, it's all about the Divine Feminine and the return of the Divine Feminine, awakening it within, and really understanding these myths and how they've played out in our manifested reality, and to be very wary of extraterrestrials and their messages and what people have to say about them. But the only reason I mentioned the thing about the underground bases is because it does appear to be, you know, reported upon, but I wouldn't say that they came in to save or to help or to be heroes, that somehow our awakening consciousness and our awareness has created these sort of events as extensions of our higher selves and our higher beings, that, you know, it naturally has an effect because we have ethereal bodies, we have chakras way above our heads, and we function as much in the unseen world as we function in the seen world and in the physical body. But to connect to Sophia and source energy, Christ Sophia consciousness, I've written a lot of articles about this, is really, really, really where it's at. And everything else will fall into place when we can get to that awareness and understanding. So I'm so grateful you brought it up. That is absolutely the focus of my work, is really to bring, you know, the awareness of Gaia Sophia, how she morphed into the physical planet, the trick of the Archons, and, you know, just the whole story and how it's played out throughout our history.
While you were speaking, I was reminded of an email that I got this week that had a very interesting concept in it. And it was in response to something I had said on the air. But the concept was that we are like fiber optics. You can see the fiber, but its value is the light on the inside. And that's kind of how we are. You can see us. I mean, here we are. But our value and who we are is the light that's on the inside. And, you know, a fiber optic carries information via light on the inside. And one of the things that is kind of interesting about that is a fiber optic is intended for that purpose, but can only function properly if there is light on the inside. And though I'm not religious, a quote comes to mind from Jesus, where he said, "Beware if your light is darkness." Be careful. If your light is darkness, you got problems. But right. I just thought that was an interesting concept about us, you know, being like fiber optics. It's a physical thing that you can see from the outside, but its value is the light that's on the inside and the information that light's carrying.
It's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's go back to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, good evening, Kevin. This is Terry from Ohio.
Hello, Terry.
Hi. I'd like to ask Laura if she thinks that that this 2012 stuff coming up is all, you know, with religion, end times, the Mayans, and all that stuff. Is that a programming to bring us down, you know, to self-destruct more or less?
Well, that's a great question, because, you know, the function of the Archons is so that we annihilate ourselves, so that we're kind of possessed by the forces, that we've been so manipulated that we create our own self-destruction. And there's tons of belief systems, and there's so much information that kind of validates it. To me, 2012 is really full of creative potential, and I really stress to people to, you know, create their own journey, not to just adopt anything that they hear and believe, and to understand that this is a fertile time to awaken to who you are and what your dream is and what your vision is and what your abilities are and, you know, the things that you value.
All right, Terry, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
All right. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, I just have just one more short thing.
Go ahead.
Fine. Does she see, since, you know, the folklore stuff, you know, aside 2012, but we are going into Venus eclipse and, you know, center galactic alignment, and I think a moon eclipse or something. Does she see that empowering us or something, anything at all in this time period? And I'll listen offline. Thanks.
All right. Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this is an important just window period, and the cosmos is on our side. It's always been on our side, and that's the thing. That's what the distraction and mind control is all about. We're naturally ascending beings. We're naturally enlightened beings. We're naturally God-creative beings. I mean, there is no God except for the whole of creation, including us. And religion has separated that. You know, doom prophecies and predictions and projections have separated us from our own creative energy and our abilities to manifest the world that we want. So the cosmos is always on our side, and it's supporting this growth. It's you know, and the apocalypse means the lifting of the veils. But the thing is, they're in competition with this. Their target date is 2012, and so is this incredible shift date. They know all this. They know all the numbers. They know everything. And so they'll further try and distract us, and that's what false flags are for. That's what chemtrails are for, and that's what every insult that we see and our world is for, is so that we're distracted from the amount of incredible energy that's emanating from the galactic core, which is also a function of the awakening that's happening on Earth, because, you know, these two things connect. You can't have one without the other. So as that huge momentum is happening, you know, they're going to want to try and pull something, you know, just like the Rockefeller quote, it takes the perfect crisis to implement New World Order and for, you know, the world to agree that that's what should happen. Well, we're all getting smarter and wiser. So, yes, on a cosmic level, you know, this is true. This is happening. We want to, you know, stay focused on it. We want to stay close to Gaia, stay close to our heart and our truth, our families, our friends, everything that counts, everything that matters, and not pay too much attention to anything else, because it just definitely has a chance of distracting us. I'm not saying don't listen to people, but definitely weigh it against your own truth. And if it compromises your freedom, your free thinking, and your open heart, then I would put it somewhere else, because this is a time of great potential, and we'll be distracted into anything else so that our beings are not able to bring it in. You know, and the resource is there. We don't want to miss the mark, so it's important that we focus on it. So yes, as this truth is happening and we're emerging into a higher frequency, there is also this other agenda that wants to entrap us, enslave us, and bring them into their agenda by making us agents without realizing it, by buying into their beliefs, by buying into the false flags, by thinking that we need them, and you know, whatever dependencies that are there. So, you know, it's about self-sufficiency, it's about soul work, it's about community, it's about unity, but, you know, not looking to them to initiate that, but hoping to forgive and to bring them in when we create that victory. So, yes, we're cosmically supported. The main missing link right now is the feminine energies within men and women to really empower that, bring it to light, drop all the stereotypes and all the programmings that diminish it, and you know, and also to bring the male to the divine self, less control, be more in touch with, you know, the emotional body and all that kind of stuff. You know, the stuff that people think it's ridiculous, that they get cynical about, it's probably one of the important stuff to focus on right now, because it's a beautiful movement in consciousness and in just free and all of us have seen the injustices that have happened, pulled together, and we work together because that unified field is basically being used to move the planet, and we need that more than anything right now. So I believe in the most positive. I advocate for the most positive outcome. But and I see the negative as a very alchemical force, as a catalyst, as something that we see as where we don't want to go, to remind us where we belong. And so we'll be challenged to see it as something that'll help get us back on track, rather than be something that'll further take us into the trap. So it'll put us back on track rather than take us into the trap.
All right, Terry, thanks for the call. We have a flash message from Nick in Costa Rica, and he says, I believe Laura must be the reincarnation of her great-granddad. Does she ever consider this?
That's funny. Somebody said that to me once. They're pretty psychic. They were hanging out with me. They said, you know, I see all these processes you're going through, and, you know, it's just like, I think you're Eisenhower. And I said, yeah, you know, maybe, but, you know, I trained at a clairvoyant institute for a long time, and they said, you know, when they met me, they didn't know I was related to him. They said, Eisenhower's in the room, like President Eisenhower. And they said that his presence was there. They didn't say that I was, you know, an incarnation, but that he's with me. And I said, oh, did you know I was related to him? They said, no, we didn't. And I said, oh, well, he's my relative. They said, oh, well, he's with you. You know, he's by your side. And other people have said that to me. So I more think he's by my side. But, you know, it wouldn't be too difficult for me to comprehend if somebody said, you know, you are the incarnation. I had actual, you know, real proof. But I'm not here to make any claims. But I do feel very close, and I feel our missions are so intertwined. But, yeah, I see us as allies that we co-create, we work together. I don't have a lot of flashes on that lifetime. I more just feel, you know, just his energy and his presence, and I learn through that rather than, you know, going back into past lives or hypnoregression. My hypnoregressions have connected me more to the feminine aspects. But anyway, that's interesting, and I appreciate it. I feel, you know, that's a lot, you know, that's cool. So thank you for saying that. But
yeah,
I definitely know he's with me.
Nick, thanks for the flash message. We're almost out of time. Let me just comment on what you had said in answering Terry. I have said that this current, I use the word paradigm because that's something that has come to be fairly commonly understood by most people. But this current paradigm of power and control is in its death spasms. We're watching it die. Now, like many wild animals, in its death spasms, it can become very dangerous and very challenging. But it's in its death spasms. People are waking up and learning to say no. Now, when they had the demonstrations, the protests in Tunisia that overthrew the dictator in Tunisia, they interviewed a young guy on the street. I saw this on television, and I so rarely watch television, but I happened to catch this. They said, what's the big difference? You know, what difference does all this make? What's all this about? He said, the difference is between yesterday and today. Today, I can say something I could not say yesterday. And they said, what is that? And he said, no. I can say no. I am free.
Oh.
So that's the background of what I say when I say that's the most powerful word in our language. Nobody can control you unless you agree with it. Well, they can if you don't know what they're up to. But if you know what they're up to, the only way they can control you is for you to say yes. And when you say no, they can't control you. And so many people are waking up and learning how to say no to the controls on them that those in power are losing their grip, and we're watching the death spasms of this paradigm.
Absolutely. It's a beautiful time to be alive and to recognize that and to embrace it and to just inspire others to take the same stand. Because nobody would put up, I mean, it's the same thing. Do we want to put up with an abusive, controlling relationship? Do we want to be cheated on, lied to, deceived? No. And we have to recognize that's what's been happening, and we need to, you know, say no, put our foot down, and not necessarily go to war, but step into what they've tried to take away and reclaim it and bring our power back to ourselves, because we gave it away. We trusted, and that's because we have open hearts. Well, now we know better, and we're going to bring it back. And without that to feed on, they have nothing.
That is absolutely the case. I want to thank you for being with us. If you will, stay on the line with me for just a moment as I bring this flight of the Kevin Smith Show Starship in for a landing. Ladies and gentlemen, that's Laura Eisenhower. I hope you have enjoyed the show this evening. You have a chance to meet her. You have a chance to hear her again at the Alchemy Event 2011. Get your tickets and see us there.